Welcome back to the Crown Refs podcast for episode 280. This episode covers the 2022-23 NFHS points of emphasis for this upcoming basketball season, with the main focus centered around sportsmanship and respect for the game. Now more than ever, officials have the leverage and support to call the rules as written and not allow verbal abuse towards officials from coaches, players, spectators, or disrespectful behavior amongst opponents. We just need to have the communication and game management skills to execute these rules properly. The CR Mentor Group recently spent time discussing these points of emphasis and how we can tactically apply the information in our games. We also covered a full pregame conference and listed many points that we think will help you this season and beyond. As always, the Crown Refs podcast is brought to you by RefereeStore.com. For all your uniform needs and referee gear, go to RefereeStore.com. If you're looking to save 15% on their new product called United Attire, enter Crown15 at checkout. We hope you enjoy this episode, and do me one last favor before you go. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to the Crown Refs podcast, the audio experience for basketball officials. Serve the game.
So let's start with the points of emphasis. I took a brief skim over it, but I really was inspired by it because, well, let me screen share. Because the first thing that was up there was sportsmanship, which is something that we've been pretty consistent about. So it's nice to see it get a little bit of national recognition. I can't remember a time where I saw sportsmanship like number one on their list. Hey, Carmela Garcia, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys?
We are. I'll speak for the group. We're awesome. And thanks for sharing that monitor info today. Very helpful.
Of course.
You know, the great thing about our group is it's meant to get stronger with each new member that we add, right? So it's like, if we could have 100 teachers on it, that's way better than one. So how that's manifested is with everybody sharing their knowledge and sharing their resources that they have, because it just makes us all better. And that's why we say grow together. So I'm going to read this verbatim, because one of the great things about these documents too, and I want to line this up for you guys, is a lot of this language is what I would insert into my rapid responses. These are all conversations that you can have with the coach, and you can pull right from some of these key points. So I want you guys to think about that going in as I'm reading this over, and maybe we can kind of discuss some good responses that we can form off of these points of emphasis. This is the first piece of information that NFHS has put out, you know, besides the rule book. So sportsmanship, good sporting behavior is one of the fundamental ingredients to the continued success and enjoyment of education-based high school sports and activities. In fact, the 103-year history of the organized high school sports in the United States, good sportsmanship has been one of the most important outcomes of high school activity programs. Okay. NFHS rules are written to encourage sportsmanship. Participation in these programs should promote respect, integrity, and sportsmanship. However, for these ideals to occur, everybody involved in these programs must be doing their part. Hint, hint, officials on this call, we have to do our part, but they're speaking about everybody, schools, athletic directors, so on and so forth. NFHS is concerned that unsporting behavior in education-based athletics has increased across all sports. As a result, the NFHS has made sportsmanship the number one point of emphasis. Wow. See, there you go. There's a response right there for you. Coach, the number one point of emphasis of this school year is sportsmanship, and then just play off that. So something to pull from. Sportsmanship, or good sporting behavior, is about treating one another with respect and exhibiting appropriate behavior. It is about being fair, honest, and caring. When these types of appropriate behavior occur, competitive play is more enjoyable for everybody. Coaches set the tone at athletic contests with their display of sportsmanship. If these individuals act in a sportsmanlike manner, Their behavior sets the tone for their players, spectators, and others. If coaches, however, are complaining constantly about the decision of contest officials, spectators are more likely to do the same. There must be a collaborative working relationship. Coach, me and you, we have to develop a working relationship here. Another thing to implement. A working relationship between contest officials and game administration to promote good sportsmanship and safely conduct the contest. Everyone has their roles to play in creating a positive sportsmanlike atmosphere at contests. Here we go. Officials should focus on the actions of players, coaches, and other bench sideline personnel. A positive open line of communication between officials and coaches ultimately results in a better contest for everyone involved. Hey, coach, I'm trying to maintain open lines of communication here, but you have to meet me halfway. Write that one down. Contest officials, however, should never engage with spectators who are exhibiting unsporting behavior. Once the contest begins, school administration is responsible for dealing with unruly spectators. A proactive approach by school administration includes monitoring the behavior of spectators and intervening as needed. If spectators are using demeaning or profane language at officials or others in the stand, those individuals should be removed from the contest by school administration. So any kind of profane language, I mean, there's no warnings really. I mean, they say it right here. So it's important going in, and this is something we'll mention in the pregame when we start to draft it, is you got to know who is game administrator, who is the site supervisor. The R should handle that and make the crew aware, and then also touch base with that person on the court during the pregame check. Just introducing themselves, you know, we're on the same team here tonight, and you know, if we have to remove anybody from the stands, I'm your guy, Paul. Gotcha. High school sports and other activities exist to lift people, not demean or tear people down. The goal is to treat everyone fairly and treat each other with respect. Any speech or harassment that is insulting, demeaning, or hurtful will not be tolerated. Hey, coach, I have so much respect for you. I would never insult you the way that you just did to me and my crew. I'm going to need you to be more professional. Is that fair? High school officials must establish a culture that values the worth of every single person, both players on the school's team and players on the opposing team. There must be a no-tolerance policy regarding behavior that shows disrespect for another individual. So that can come in the form of a technical foul or the gray area of the game where we're managing them with our game management skills. But anytime we see disrespectful behavior, it needs to be addressed in one form or another. Good sports win with humility, lose with grace, and do both with dignity. It takes the efforts of everyone every day to ensure that sportsmanship remains one of the top priorities in education-based activity programs. So hopefully we're able to pull some of that language into just how you respond and how you communicate on the court. That's what we mean when we say being like having a rule-based response. It's not exactly pulled from the rule book, but it's incorporating rule-based language and human language together for the best product. Let's look at some of these reducing illegal contact. This is probably not too new. We've been hearing about this. Maybe we won't do the whole thing, but to maintain the sound traditions of all sport, encourage sportsmanship, and minimize the inherent risk of injury, playing rules are developed to serve the varying skill for the involved participants. As a result, it's incumbent on contest officials to enforce the rules as written. When officials allow personal philosophies to enter into their enforcement of the rules, unintended advantages can be provided to players or teams, advantages that can determine the outcome of a contest. The NFHS Rules Committee expects officials to adhere to the playing rules for high school contests as written. Participants should expect nothing less from contest officials on a nightly basis, and the enforcement of all playing rules should be made without regard for time and circumstance. A foul or violation in the first quarter is expected to be a foul or violation in the last minute of a contest. Some coaches may wish for the game to be called looser. Officials should avoid giving into that mindset, regardless of the location of the game or participants involved. Of particular concern for the committee is the growing individual interpretations of certain plays that are increasing the amount of illegal contact being allowed. The type of plays listed below. All right, so hand checks. Very clear for officials to apply. During recent years, freedom of movement for players has improved, and officials need to remember the simplest concepts that prohibit defensive players from placing two hands, an extended arm bar, keeping a hand on, or contact an opponent more than once. So second touch is an automatic foul. In most cases, just keep in mind with the hand checks, I like to use my voice, especially if it's really far out, you know, near half court, hands off. Now, I'm not going to coach the player consistently all game, but in the 2 to 4 times throughout a game where there's like that hand check play, I would prefer to use my voice, hands off. That's all I say, but it works very well and it allows a little bit better of a flow. But again, we're not going to manipulate the rules in any way or coach the same player multiple times. Maybe if you see him doing it twice, you might want to let him know, hey, got to keep your hands off. This is something, you know, this is up to you, but this is part of game management. Post play, while freedom of movement has generally improved, there is still a need for officials to pay attention to play in the post. From a review of nationally injury data, more basketball injuries occur in the post than any other place on the floor. Officials need to monitor play in the post, whether the ball is involved or not. Players who either illegally carve out space for themselves or defenders who repeatedly push, knee, or otherwise attempt to knock offensive players off balance need to be penalized for their actions. Failure to address the first illegal contact in the post when players are displaced often leads to more physical play from players who become to believe that more physical play is going to be allowed on a given night. Regardless of the player's location on the floor, when a player's rhythm, speed, balance, or quickness is impeded, a foul has occurred. So that's more good language for you guys in both your processing of the illegal contact, play calling part of it, but then a response to a coach. My guy's getting, it's a hand check. He's got his hands all over him. Well, coach, he put one touch on, and then the rest had no effect on his rhythm, speed, balance, or quickness. Did you see something different? Another thing with post play too is just really using your voice. It's one of the areas of the court where I find myself using my voice the most on the meet and greets in the post. Players rotating over, establishing that initial interaction. If you see it's a little too rough or they're grabbing, like hands off, let go, easy. Those are my three go-tos. Anytime I see kind of, I'll call it a pre-foul. Now, this is not in the rule book, a pre-foul. I've never even said that before. But it's incidental contact that is starting to rise to the level of illegal, where there's an opportunity maybe for us to use our voice to be proactive there. Not that we're preventing a foul, but these are the fouls that are like, all right, on a free throw, two players are like grabbing and holding, you know, using my voice there. So I don't have to blow the whistle maybe and on a just like an ugly play. This is just feel for the game stuff. So use your voice in post play. Off ball, same thing with off ball. Let's see what they say. Keeping eyes on off ball plays is also necessary to help reduce the physicality in the game. Officials need to remain focused on their primary coverage area, and off ball play is just as critical as any other position on the floor. Officials who tend to ball watch will miss screening plays in front of them that involve illegal contact. Remember, a difference between like a ball watch, or I'll say a ball glance, and then ball staring. Obviously, we have to have a feel for where the ball is and know where the play is going. And we do that constantly with a glance, I'll call it. Just don't be a starer if it's outside your primary. And this comes with self-talk too, reminding yourself to watch your primary coverage area. Allowing action by screeners, cutters, and defenders are outlined in the rules, and officials who focus on their primary area will naturally officiate these kinds of plays with more accuracy and consistency. when either the offense or defense are allowed to play outside the screening and defending rules of the ball, more physical and illegal play tends to follow. Even if players are not initially in an off-ball area, the official covering that space needs to remain focused on their primary area and trust that their partners will handle these areas. Anybody want to chime in here at any point? I kind of want to just read this for myself and for you guys to just get this verbiage down. In enforcing the rules as written, officials should also pay particular attention to the mechanics, signals they use, along with the interactions with players, coaches, administrators, and spectators. Enforcing the playing rules while maintaining appropriate composure and decorum is also essential to maintaining good sportsmanship and sends the message that the officials have called a good and fair game. Official need to demonstrate proper authority, behavior at all times in their dealings with players, coaches, administrators, spectators, recognizing their important role in the education base. So we need proper behavior. So signaling this when a player dunks on top of another player. I don't know if anybody caught that clip today. I'll send it to you guys, but just a ref went viral because it looked like an AAU type setting, you know, offensive player dunks on him and then the ref just goes like this, which is the new trash talking signal for you got dunked on, your head got dunked on. I'm sure a lot of the veteran mechanic sticklers are going crazy at that video. All right, let's wrap up here and then we'll create this pregame meeting. Oh, let's see, legal uniforms. Do we even want to touch on this? Requires that game officials verify with each head coach prior to the start of the contest that the team's uniforms and equipment are legal. Yeah, I've never done that, although I do it in field hockey and girls lacrosse, but I've never done it in basketball. I say, hey, coaches, both teams legally and properly equipped? That's my opening line for lacrosse and field hockey. I've never done it with basketball. I don't think it's very relevant, so I would recommend skipping that part. See, a couple of the recommendations they give you as far as the pregame is super robotic. How many of you have had that official where that comes to the pregame and pulls out that card and reads verbatim what the state wants you to say? You know, like you could just tell the players and coaches kind of frowning upon that. Not that we care, but it's not the most human touch, I don't think. All participants will exhibit proper sporting behavior throughout the contest. Before and after this pregame verification, officials should monitor players and notify the head coach if they notice anything needs to be addressed, including the color of the uniforms. All game officials are responsible for monitoring this. If an official identifies any uniform, all right, or equipment that's an issue, all right, we'll skip that part. Last two paragraphs. To the extent practical, game officials should also know who the game administrators are for the contest in the event they need to be called upon. The home management is responsible for spectator behavior. Let's put these game administrators to work this year because they're here to support us. But if we don't ask them to, they're not going to go out of their way for us. Insofar as it can be reasonably be expected to control the spectators, in the absence of a designated school representative serving as game administrator, the home coach, interesting to know, the home coach shall serve as the host management. So that could definitely happen in a high school game where there's nobody there. And if the home coach is giving you an issue, you can remind them what their duties are for this game. And it's to be a home coach and a game administrator. So you give them that responsibility if you ever have that situation. I think that will be very effective if you kind of bring that to light. Knowing who will help address any behavior or sportsmanship issues that occur will allow game officials to confidently execute their duties. Officials should not be expected to correct illegal uniforms, equipment, or misconduct, only to bring those to the attention of the people best positioned to remedy those issues or on any given night. So, I mean, they laid it out for us right there. You don't have to sit and referee these games and get just destroyed all game from the crowd. I think we're moving out. That's kind of a thing of the past. We have the opportunity to make it a thing of the past. So our ducks are in line here. Game administrator, they're our best friend. If it's an issue, that you want to bring to their attention. You could let them know, all right, this section right here, you know, they're being inappropriate. Please let them know the next thing they say towards the officials, they're going to be gone. And then they just do their job. You don't have to have any interaction with the fans. If it happens again, you stop the game, and or do it during a dead ball or a timeout and go get the game administrator to take care of that. Any thoughts or questions so far on this document? Anybody want to share? Can you see how you can implement some of this language into your responses? Cool. Let's see what else they got for us. Reducing legal contact, pregame meeting. Signals are the same. I don't think there's any new signals. Did anybody get a chance to look at this and see anything new here? Don't think there is. Let's just take a glance at these. I don't know how often you guys look at the signals chart, but it's a great piece of content. I follow this signals chart about 96% of the way, I would say. You know, the bird dog, they need to just eliminate five. I don't know why it's even still in here. The directional signal, okay, the by the book is the open hand. You know, you've heard me say two fingers or one finger point, but you do what works for you. Designated spot throw in, a nice sharp point to the spot. See the way this lady is holding the ball. I recommend holding it up on a platter because you're here to serve the game. Visible counts, this is pretty good in the way it's in the book, just straight out with the arm, extension of the shoulder, shoulder height, beckoning in the subs, warm, welcome, invite them in. Don't give them a little sneaky, bring them in the back door type of beckon. It's like they're coming in your house. Come on in, join us. 30-second timeout, you don't gotta jab 100 times. Okay, coach White, 30-second timeout, start the clock. I hope everybody's working on their start the clock signal too. It's like the cutest signal we have. Not closely guarded. I rarely use this one in high school. When was the last time you called a 5-second count in high school closely guarded? So one thing to keep in mind is I see a lot of officials are very quick to start their 5-second count. Like every interaction, A1, B1, boom. Then it passes A2, B2, boom. So don't let that count speed you up, just knowing that you're very rarely going to call a 5-second call. So it should not like speed up our processing and make us feel rushed out there. I'm sure some of you guys have felt rushed doing that. It's like the number one concern is starting the 5-second closely guarded count.
Well, I got a question.
Yeah, please.
Man, people have different approaches. Some, I guess the book says 6 feet. Some people say arm's length. When do you usually start that process?
Well, what does the book say? Let's go back to what the book says.
I think it says six. I'm not.
6 feet from the start of what to the end of what? Or what's the end points?
I'm not really sure. I'll have to find it. But.
So let's pull it up then, because the best way to answer this question is to have the rule in front of us so we can say it verbatim. And then there's no philosophy on this play. This is pretty black and white, although you have to judge 6 feet. So that's going to be a little gray because we don't have a radar. We don't have like augmented reality where it measures 6 feet. Go ahead. You got the rule up?
I haven't, yeah.
By the way, you guys should all have the rule book on your phone. Does anybody have it? It allows you to search the rule, which is quicker access to getting the answer you want versus going in the book. But
I have it if you want to.
Yeah, Carmelo. She's quick. Carmelo's quick to buzz in. Go ahead, Carmelo.
So it says the distance shall be measured from the forward feet of the defender to the forward feet of the ball handler. A closely guarded count shall be terminated when the offensive player in control of the ball gets his or her head and shoulders past the defensive player.
So, Carrie, re-ask your question now.
Within 6 feet of the player who is holding or dribbling the ball.
I just feel like 6 feet is a big area, don't you? I mean, you could start that.
You feel like it's a big area, like you're having trouble judging what 6 feet is, or you don't like the rule?
I'm not necessarily saying I don't like it. I think we could start that 5 seconds a lot of times in a game. And don't you agree?
Oh, for sure. And that's why I'm making the point to not be so quick to always start that 5 second count.
Yeah. I got you. I was just, some people say like a arm's length. I don't really, I've always just in my mind thought when they got close, just kind of started. And when they got that separation, I stopped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, listen, you could straight up mark 6 feet on the floor and kind of train your eyes what that six feet looks like. I think if you extend your arms all the way, it's pretty comparable to 6 feet. So again, this is kind of the gray area, although it's kind of a black and white rule, but we don't have a tape measure. So just do your best. And one thing I do with 5 second counts, B1 comes closely guarded as A1. I'm not counting that first second. I catch up at two. And then I just make up for that time. And by the I have a sense of what 5 seconds is. It's not going to be a perfect 5 seconds. But if we initiate that count, we're going to be doing this all game long.
That's what I was.
So,
you know, hey, Paul, real quick. An interesting verbiage in that rule is that the 5 second count shall be terminated. Maybe you have to reread it again, Carmela. If they get their head and shoulders past the defender, right? So that's implying that if I'm guarding you and I don't get my head and shoulders behind you, but I back away from you as a dribbler and create more than 6 feet of distance, like I always terminate the 5 second count. But in the rule book, it implies the only time you're going to terminate the 5 second count is when I get my head and shoulders past you once I start my count. Right? Are we all in agreement that if I'm being closely guarded, and then I get some separation as I back towards mid court, I'm terminating that 5 second count. I'm not continuing that 5 second count. Is that correct?
If it breaks the 6 feet distance, yes.
Yeah. Interesting. It's just that the rule book doesn't mention that, right?
Or if they pick up the ball, you're at 3 seconds, 4 seconds. Yeah. And they pick up the ball, it resets.
Yeah.
It's probably implied that if it's not within the 6 feet closely guarded, then they don't mention it, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe it was while you do have a count, one way to discontinue the count is when the offensive blows by.
You beat him, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, this is good.
I agree, though. Like, I feel like if we were to go by the 6 foot rule, we'd be starting that 5 second count every time down, right? For me, it's like 2, maybe even 3 feet, like – you're closely guarded, and everyone knows in the gym knows you're closely guarded. 6 feet, you're not closely guarded,
but you are in the book.
By the book, you are. If we're going by the book, then we should be starting 5 second counts every other time down the, you know, every possession, basically.
Well, I think this is one of those situations that we don't got to be too pure on it. I mean, I don't think we have a. I mean, me specifically, I don't have a ton of games where the coaches are out here clamoring for 5 seconds. I think you also got to consider the type of defense. Yeah, you could argue they're 6 feet away, but if it's just standing it right at 6 feet and you wouldn't really call that a active or, you know, in engaged matchup, well, we're not going to really, all right, well, they're 6 feet, let's get our count going. I don't think we have to be too pure on a 5 second count.
Yeah, I don't think I think I called maybe one all last year.
And that's the point of this whole conversation is you might call one. Not that you don't want to miss it, could be a big spot, but you're probably going to call one. So all this talk about 5 seconds is great, but it's a call we really don't call that much. So
yeah,
shouldn't be too much emphasis on it. One thing I'm trying to do with my wave off signal is kind of go more like the book and start a little bit toward more closer to my elbows versus just towards my fingers. So I'm just kind of creates a just a clear fluid motion. It's a nice wipe and should be just one wipe. And then you hold your hands up for like a second to really kind of sustain the note with the strong whistle. Gold counts. All right. Try to, in the book, they're telling us this flush. I would do two fingers across the body. This looks a little old school to me. So that's probably the one of the 4% that I'm not fully on board with. Points scored, one or two after signaling, 16. What is that? Goal counts is 16. 17 is points scored. So use one or two fingers after the signal. That's interesting.
If they got fouled, how many shots we have? One shot. Is that what it's saying?
Well, this is a made basket, so I don't understand. Right. We do 16, we're scoring it. 17 looks like a score it just a different way.
Got a made basket, one shot, I guess. It's allowing your partners to know whether we're shooting one or two. I don't know.
The three-point demonstration is perfect in the book, so I would try to just model that. Well done. Bonus free throw, one-on-one. One thing I've been doing recently, last few years, is this, which is an unapproved. It's straight NBA. I've been doing it in college and high school, so I'm just going to go back to the one-on-one, keep it simple. Just a small adjustment I'm making. Signal one free throw, delayed violation, traveling signal. Make sure it's tight and compressed. It's funny, we always say hit, but there's no hit foul. It's illegal use of the hands. Something we don't really talk about. It's a play that we all, or a foul that we all get wrong, and we're all using the incorrect verbiage. But I'm going to keep saying hit probably. I like that I feel like the hand check, they updated this motion. I don't remember it looking like that. I feel like after I released a few hand check videos, they might have made the update. I don't know. I'm just saying. I'd like to think that. I'd like to think they were inspired to do sportsmanship with some of the awareness that we've raised on it. Holding looks really good in the book too. Just finish it at the end. Legal dribble, one, two, three, strong point. At the end, same thing with a carry, one, two, three, strong point. With these violations, finish it with a really strong point. It's going to show polish. You know how I feel about number 34, the blocking signal. Push looks good. Team control, remember high school, we're stopping the clock behind the head, point. Got to stop the clock. Anybody having issues stopping the clock on all fouls still in high school? Anybody coming in under 100% of the time? John, you just ready to punch, right?
Yeah, I know. Bad habits die hard.
So slow yourself down. Here's a quick tip. If you have a foul, you have a fist. If you have a foul, you have a fist. You say that 100 times. The next crash you get, foul. Oh, shit. It worked. Good point. So it's just these little ways to train your brain and kind of build that muscle memory. Foul fist, that worked for me. 5 second violation, 10 second violation. Has anybody ever had excessively swinging the elbows within the last 2 years? Very uncommon. Kicking, I like to point to the foot too. For kickballs, so I do that motion with the little point. Intentional foul, something to keep in mind when your partner calls an intentional foul and just comes up with it. Good rule of thumb would be to mirror that and just kind of show that support and that team chemistry that you're both on the same page. All right, technical foul and double foul. By the way, double fouls do occur, so don't let anybody tell you if you call a double foul, you missed the first one. Because it's possible for two human beings to foul themselves at the same time. So don't be in the mindset that, oh, I'm not calling double foul. It means I missed one or I don't like that call. Don't be emotional about rules. The rule book doesn't care about our opinions. So let's do this. I want to start making this pregame document. I think this will be good stuff that we could kind of all build on it. Let me pull up an older one that I had that needs to be updated. Anybody have any pre-games documents? Oh, yeah, Carmel. Did you share that one? Or is that a new one you made? Tell us about
it. No, it's from last year.
Okay.
I haven't made one yet. But I'm pretty much going to keep it, just add a couple things in it.
Okay. Pre-game. Yeah, I did this like 3 years ago. This is one of like the earlier pieces of content that I did that just everybody seemed to want a copy of. So we're going to do it again this year. It'll be a nice thing to share. I'll update this in it. So the way I did my pregame was I put it into different categories. Communication, game management, play calling. Play calling, mechanics. Positioning, clock awareness, rule changes. So usually we'll start the unwritten part of your pregame is obviously to ask about their family, ask about their personal life, and really build that rapport with them before you even talk about hoops. That's most important. That's going to make your game go much, much smoother, I think, overall, or just the relationship, the working relationship will be better. Once you get done with all that and the business part of it begins, then I would start with rules. I'll just do it on this one. So what are some rules that we want to include to discuss? And we'll make this collaborative. Why don't we all contribute to this?
I always do the POEs, whatever they are that this year, which you mentioned, just a reminder.
Okay. Points of emphasis, sportsmanship. What was the second one, Carmela?
I have it right here. Reducing illegal contact. Or I guess you could do freedom of movement, one of the two.
And the third one was post?
That's part of the illegal contact. The other one was about addressing illegal uniforms.
Okay. Did we miss the part, the rule change part? I thought there was a document of rule changes.
Is it a rule changing year?
Or I think NFHS every year they do make updates, as what one of the employees told me.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the rule book, the new rule book right now.
Nothing in there?
I'm not seeing them. I'm seeing rule fundamentals. There's changes. The hair control devices are a change.
What could you say that again?
The hair control devices or adornments that are fastened or close to the head that don't increase risk to the athlete, teammates, or opponents. Those are allowed. And then the new change is the shot clock, but not everyone uses it. We're not using it in New Mexico.
You don't have a shot clock this year?
No.
I thought you guys thought everybody did.
No, not us.
We don't either.
Yeah, we didn't. No, we didn't vote it in. So. Hmm. Yeah, I would prefer a shot clock to help. It would help with college, but we didn't vote it in.
Okay. So what parts of rules when you're meeting with your partners do you guys bring up? What?
Mm-hmm. Freedom of movement is a big one. RSBQ house.
So then we'll go rules, play calling, mechanics. So freedom of movement. Hand checks. This is stuff we've seen in the book for the last 5-7 years.
Post play illegal screens.
Chucking, cutters. So cleaning up, freedom of movement, hand checks, post play. Here's another thing, like we shouldn't be saying in the pregame. Guys, we got to come out and get all the hand checks. We got to come out tonight and get all the illegal screens. So you just got to come out and get what is available and what is illegal. Don't come in there with a preconceived notion that you need to be calling something in particular. That's a way to really not set yourself up to be accurate. And we love accuracy.
Rebounding.
Rebounding.
Yeah.
Rebounding plays are also a good opportunity to talk, use your voice, be proactive. Let's see, what else do I have on this? So post play, call the first foul, rebounding, displacement. I'll bullet point all these before we share, clean it up. Offensive initiated contact. On legal defenders, verticality,
protecting the shooter,
here, protecting the shooter, feet,
line, foul.
feet, foul, floor, flop. The four F's, feet, foul, floor, flop. So when you're mentioning just this bullet, all right, guys, protecting the shooter, just think of feet, foul, floor, flop. You're looking at his feet. Did he or she travel? Is it a 2 or 3 point goal? Foul is, did the defender hit the shooter's arm? Floor, did the defender allow the shooter to land? Flop, did the shooter flop after the landing? And flopping is something I'm probably going to mention during my pregame captain's meeting this year. And it's going to be the same exact thing as last time. Hey, white talks to white, blue talks to blue. If we talk to you, we're trying to help you. Besides that, respect each other, respect the game, respect yourselves. Guys, just to give you a heads up, flopping is an automatic technical foul, just like it is in NCAA men's. So please tell your teammates to stay on their feet. Coaches, we're very approachable if you have a question, but we expect professional communication from you guys. Good luck tonight. And that's another thing I'll draft for you guys to have too, but I think that's been pretty successful. Or screening. Screening should be obvious. Legal screens should be obvious. Let them call themselves. I think legal screens is a play that we ponder a lot and wonder if, oh, is this legal, illegal? That was a close one. His shoulder was sticking out a little bit. Oh, his feet were a little too wide. But I think when you revert back to having this perspective, just making screenings Legal screens, obvious. Just let them call themselves. Just be 1,000% on legal screens. Be 1,000% on everything. But hopefully that's something that can help you guys judge in illegal screens, because
there's you can only be 100%. Can't be more than 100%.
Can't be 100.
You can't be more than 100. It's not possible.
Isn't 100 and 1,000 the same thing, pretty much?
No.
No.
1,000%. Why wouldn't you just say 100?
Yeah, I just kind of want to give it a little more than 100. Just kind of looking to go above and beyond, Lance. It's just an additional layer of certainty, my friend.
I feel you. I feel you.
Thank you. Thank you for the 975 emails you sent me, by the way.
No problem.
Thank you. Judge them by a legal contact over a legal action. This is just something to note. Judge illegal screens over a legal contact over a legal action, meaning, all right, his feet are too wide. That is an illegal action. But on this play, it didn't create a legal contact. Okay, his elbow is kind of sticking out, but it barely brushed the offensive player. Yes, that's an illegal action, but it didn't create any illegal contact. And if you see illegal actions maybe once from a player, maybe twice, what's a good thing to do? Be proactive
and speak to the player.
What are you going to tell him?
If I notice somebody doing any illegal actions that could result in illegal contact, I'm just going to explain to them what they're doing, so they could look to maybe stop doing that illegal action, so it doesn't become illegal contact and turn into a foul.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to just go back to the original one we had. Let me know what we should take out. Patient on, so this is the play calling portion of it. Actually, let's go back to the top. So communication management. You can mention the point of emphasis, guys. The number one point of emphasis this year is sportsmanship. It's our job to uphold the respect and sportsmanship of the game. It's important to be on the same page with this. Something we should also mention too is the table side official should be speaking up if the coach is shouting across at one of our partners. I know this has been a hot topic that we've spoken about a lot, but this should be inserted into the pregame. Portia, if I'm getting yelled at from across the court and you're right there table side, that's a great opportunity to de-escalate that coach and handle that and, you know, take that responsibility. Where it gets tricky is when Portia doesn't do that. Now he's shouting across and then it's just not the way we want to manage the game. So being a strong table side official. Establishing a culture of respect. Let's be extremely approachable, courteous, blend it with firmness. Hold the coaches and players accountable for their actions, reactions, and overreactions. Best time to approach a coach is following a timeout. That's when they're most open and receptive. Explanations should contain basketball terminology, rule-based terminology. Damn, I got to request access on my own document. When the ball is dead, we become live. So it's just a good reminder about dead ball officiating. If you see any sparks, put them out before they become a forest fire. This is a funny part, but I'll delete this because it's just sarcasm. We don't want to have to call the fire department. Don't let any player or coach come and mess up the game. So when you see those problem players, speak to them, speak to their coaches, bring the information to the coach and allow the coach the opportunity to manage that situation. Talk the players down from incidental contact before it rises to illegal. Remember we spoke about that before, those pre-fouls, hands off, easy, let go, clean it up, don't push, enough. Just examples of what you can say. Let your voice shine through when it's necessary, but know when to say nothing. So that's a skill, knowing when to insert your voice. Signal and verbalize to the crew on the sixth team foul to indicate that it's the bonus will follow. So that's a good pregame reminder. Guys, on six fouls, let's just make this little signal to each other. This way, when we call the seventh foul, we already know right away to go bonus. And if you're the non-calling official, just it's great partnering. You know, Lance, you call a foul, it's the seventh foul. I come right up. One and one, Lance, here's your shooter, 25. Great partnering, great game management. If we have to warn a player, if we have to warn a coach or a player, let the crew know. All right, Dominic, I just warned the coach. We put it in the book, 6:53, third quarter. So the next outburst is just going to be a technical foul. Hey, coach, I had to warn your player there. He was trash talking a little bit. It came, you know, I didn't think it was a technical foul, but I'm trying to bring this to you as a courtesy so we don't have to call a technical foul next time that happens. Can you help me out and manage him there? I got you, ref. I appreciate that. So if we have a technical foul, this is a big pregame point to hit. Like, let's slow down. At least two officials get together. Take your time to get the play right and get to the calling official to calm them down. If Carmella calls a tech at a coach, I'm going to go up to her, and I know she's already going to be calm, but just to provide just another layer of that to slow her down. All right, Carmella, talk to me. Carmella, what'd you have? Talk to me. I really want you to talk to me.
Oh, you really wanted to talk to me?
Yeah.
I thought you were using just an example.
We have a you have a technical foul? What happened?
I had 34 white. But as soon as push 5 black to the ground.
Okay, so 34 white is going to be a technical foul. So who do we have our shooter? You said 5?
Yes.
All right, so 5 black is our shooter, and then the ball is going to be coming out mid-court line. So 2 in the ball. You report the foul. We have our shooter. We good?
Yes, sir.
All right, great job. Just try to slow that down as much as possible. In the moment, it's going to feel fast too. You're going to think you're going slow, and it's just going to be fast. You watch it on film, it's like, oh, it felt like I was there, like, 15 seconds, you were there 4 seconds. So super slow-mo is a good hack when you're really, really trying to slow yourself down, whether that be during a technical foul, for play calling purposes, just overall slowing yourself down. Another big pregame point to make. All right, guys, if we have a crazy play, flagrant foul, double technical foul, all of us send the teams to their bench immediately. Let's all be on the same page about this. A1 goes up for a shot. B1 crushes them from behind. Players get in each other's face immediately, loudly, authoritatively, send them to their bench. Yell at them. That's when I bring out my inner PE teacher and I'm running the gym there. I'm telling them they need to go to their bench forcefully. And that's just one of the times throughout the game where we can really use that authority, because it's our job to uphold the safety of the game. So safety is now in jeopardy during those moments. That's when you use your authoritative voice. Also pointing too. Verbalizing back to their bench, pointing and signaling them. The sweeping motion or the pushing motion. Consistently, constantly. Until they move, and then that's going to give them time and distance away from each other. The coach will have an opportunity to talk to them down. We'll have an opportunity to discuss the crazy play we just had and take our time with it. So these last two are big points, and I'll highlight them too when I share this. Immediately sending teams to their bench. Presents good optics for the game when we get together to discuss that potential flagrant fouls, even if you think it was a common foul. Let's get in between the players on timeouts. So every timeout, somebody has to be at midcourt, stepping in between the players, making sure there's no trash talk and nothing extracurricular. Rapid responses. We probably got to update this one. I probably wouldn't include this in my pregame. You know, teaching people what to say during a pregame. I mean, you could always give suggestions and it could come up in conversation, but this is more of like an exercise training versus the pregame. So I'll get rid of this part. Play calling. Let's just be 100%, 110%, Lance. No guessing. A couple of the initiatives to enforce hand checking, body bumping, post play, call the first foul. Possession consequences, something to think about for rebounding plays, right? Did the defender, did that contact cause the offensive player to get bumped off their spot, lose the ball, cause a turnover? If that's the case, then we can't allow contact to cause a violation or a turnover. So using the possession consequence is really helpful on rebounding plays. Let's ref the defender. Let's certify the legality of the defender. So if we have a block charge play, let's know if that defender is legal or illegal before the contact occurs. This way we have our answer right away. We spoke about some of these. Just owning our third. So in three-person game, we're owning our third and having the awareness to know when a crew member should come out of their primary. Right, that's what we're here to do as teammates, as great partners. Recognize when your partners are stacked, and just kind of have a feel for their look. Like, let's say it's a fast break and you're trail, and you notice your lead is running parallel to the play, and is kind of reffing the play from the sideline. Then maybe something happens in the strong side post, or even in the center of the lane. Just kind of knowing that official might not be in a great position to call across the paint there would just be one example. And just knowing, like, if a lead is stacked. So that's just higher level game awareness, knowing what your partners have and the view that they have. Very important, double whistle, stop the clock, hold, post pause process. That next line, post pause process. So you post the foul and then you pause and then you just survey the scene. If nobody else has a whistle, then you come out with your preliminary. Most likely, if you're on the outside, then your lead is going to take it. And then you just drop your hand. That's something I'll mention in the pregame. If we have a double whistle and I'm on the outside, I'll just drop my hand and that'll be your trigger to then take it, to then, you know, go behind the head or show your block. Position adjusting, stepping in between every competitive matchup on all jump shots, stay with the shooter, feet foul floor, talked about that. We can match 50-50 plays, but we can't match black and white plays. So I just put out a post about this official I was observing. He missed one play on another end and then missed another play on the other end. It was kind of like, yeah, but it evened out. And my thing is like, do you want to go 0-for-2 or 1-for-2? Like, we understand it evened out, but that's not the way it's supposed to go. We're supposed to try our hardest to get every play or every possession right. So missed calls are just part of the game. We'd rather only miss one than two. So don't let previous history kind of creep into your mindset. Position adjusting to finding every open look. Don't blow the whistle if you have a closed look. You should not be blowing the whistle if you're not 100%. If you're 98%, you're closer to 0%. Because we got to trust the system. We got to trust ourselves. As the lead, we shouldn't call through the paint on plays going away and high up because we get stacked at the rim. We get stacked at the backboard. So just be conscious as the lead, not calling. Now, there'll be plenty of times in lead you call through the paint because the contact is very visible, whether it's low or whether there was no one in the lane and you just had an open look. But just a good rule of thumb when you're working three-person games and the lane is crowded, just to not call through the paint. Trust your center. Trust your trail. Goaltending basket interference. You know, if you're 100%, come get it. It's usually going to come with the trail and center. But what I've realized is it's a very difficult call. So just someone has to be right. Someone has to get it. And sometimes the lead will have the best look, whether it's on a transition play. You know, the trail and center are back at half court. The lead's the only one really in a position to see it. So just something to keep in mind. If you're the lead and you're 100%, you know, give your trail and primary crack at it, first crack, but then come out and get it. A couple things on clock awareness. Having that inner clock, let's all look at both clocks 2 to 3 times per possession. Bo Borowski mentioned a really good point on the podcast one time, and just having those markers on the court, aka those reminders that tell you when to glance at the clock. Could be, all right, I'm cross midcourt, I'm looking at the clock. 28-foot mark, looking at the clock. Shot goes up, looking at the clock. New possession, looking at the clock. Going down the other way, running across midcourt, looking at the clock. Back at the 28-foot mark, looking at the clock. Self-talk. Time stamp all fouls, violations, and resets. Just a good exercise, too. If you have a foul, just look up at the clock. Just kind of take a snapshot of the clock, fouls, violations. It's something I need to do a better job of. I need to... Sometimes I'm forgetful of the foul count. You know, it could be 6 fouls on the board and just not conscious that we're in the bonus now. So it's just something I'm trying to improve on. Signal and verbalize to each crew member in the last 2 minutes of the second half. Okay, I think this is the NCAA, men's mechanic. All right, so that covered a good portion of the pregame. Portia, what did you think of this pregame? Some things you picked up, are you going to use?
Absolutely. I know when my first year was last year in the association, and so I had the opportunity to referee a few varsity games my first year, which was amazing, but it was nowhere near in depth. Like our pregame talk, it really wasn't. It was mostly, you know, the other veteran referees that I was with, they just mostly talked about how bad their, you know, game was the night before. It wasn't in the current moment, you know what I mean? So I'm interested to see how it's going to be, you know, if I have the opportunity of being the R and taking charge of pretty much just kind of handling a pregame conversation or even just starting it up and starting it up with these points right here. So good. I'm super excited about that. Yeah.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. You hear a lot of officials, they're kind of like, not to say complaining, but they're talking about previous games, they're talking about teams, and they're sharing their experiences. And a lot of times it just doesn't wind up helping us. So regardless, like, let's just try to not be so emotional about these teams, these coaches, these players, and just kind of have a singular focus. Each game, doesn't matter what happened in the past, doesn't matter what their record is, doesn't matter the matchup, the rivalry, doesn't matter who the best player is. All this kind of stuff is just extra information that I don't think really helps officials. We talk about it a lot because we think it applies to us, but I'm not seeing it really match up. And last year I had a big realization of that because I just had so many partners coming in just telling me how the game is going to go. Oh, watch out for 34 green. He's a dirty player. The game didn't start yet. What do you mean he's a dirty player? Because you had him once and you called one flagrant foul on him, or you called 2 fouls on him. Now you're classifying him as dirty. I know what a dirty player looks like. I don't need any insight on that. Right? It's very visible, and you could hear and see what that be by their actions. So don't go in with these preconceived thoughts, because it's only going to hold you back. Too much information is going to have you thinking that something is there when it's not. And I think less information about them is just gets you to the point where you're just trying to, you know, you're just refereeing that play, trying to be right on that possession and not bringing in too much extra stuff in there. John, talk to me. How you doing? What's talk to me about your pregame. Think this will be helpful for you? What'd you take away?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was, you know, super comprehensive, I feel like. And, I agree with what Portia was saying. You know, if I ever have the opportunity to be a crew chief this year on any of my games, I'm definitely going to, you know, make sure that we cover as much of those topics as we can. But I feel like even if I'm the U1 or U2, you know, I feel more prepared to be able to introduce some of these ideas and topics, even if, you know, my crew chief doesn't really have a whole lot to say.
Sure.
Before the game.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
So you guys get assigned by crew chief or not?
Yeah, most of the time, yeah, we get a position assignment.
It's funny, our assigning platform doesn't have that info on it for high school games.
Oh, gotcha.
So our board just tells us the more experienced official just becomes the R. So it's pretty unofficial. usually we get to the locker room and my partner's like, all right, you're the R tonight. It's usually older gentlemen. So, yeah, but I'm excited for the high school season. I'm excited for both seasons. Should be, I feel like we're really prepared. We've been working at this over a year now for a lot of you in here. I just think we've all been growing together and getting better, and I'm excited to kind of see the results of it. I hope you guys are feeling super sharp and confident and at your best. It's only going to get better from here. Alan, what do you got? Any questions, any comments about tonight?
Before I say something, I want to say hi to John. John, how's it going? I saw John at ETA. Had a pleasure reffing with him, and we had a, I forgot our lady partner. We had a girl, I forgot her name. But it was we had a great time, and John's a great guy. So hope John will be doing well in Washington, and wish him nothing but the best season for everyone else too on here too as well. You know, hope you guys have a great season. No, but in terms of pregame, this is very, very beneficial. I just had a couple of a high school three-person tournament past couple weekends ago. So, you know, this type of conversation is so important. You know, like I was a U1, and I think the most important thing is just bringing all types of different topics of, you know, how you mentioned, Paul, first being human and making sure we all stay on the same page and asking about how we are, and then get to basketball to make sure that we all get smooth for our game. But, I even took a lot of notes on here just to be sharp.
Can you share them on Discord?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Thank you.
We'll do.
Cool. Appreciate your positivity, Adam. And that's the greatest part about the group for me is obviously the camaraderie that we have and the culture, but meeting everybody in person when it happens, you know, and some of us have met already in person. Some of us we're going to meet. Others, you guys are going to meet in person. Next camp season is really, you know, how the time of year that we do meet, but you know, it's great. I love the camaraderie, and thanks for sharing that, Adam. Alan, you got anything?
No, I thought that document was great. Do you share that? Do you print that out and bring that with you and hand out a
copy? No, I just use my phone.
Yeah. You just use your phone, okay.
Yeah.
And then I had a question about, you know, you get assigned. So first year official, I go into a pregame and say my partner doesn't. He doesn't have anything right now. I'm jumping in there and saying, hey, let's just cover a couple quick points that I had. Maybe I want to watch, look over, yeah, or emphasize. Right? No, I think that's good. That's something I didn't do this year. My first year to be, you know, rookie official, didn't feel like it was my place to step in there. But I'm definitely going to implement that this year and speak up a little bit more and maybe not cover everything that's on that document, but maybe pull out two or three things that maybe I want to highlight if he or she doesn't have anything for me pregame.
Yeah, I mean, have a feel for the room. You know, in high school, this situation is different in high school than it is in college. In 95% of the college locker rooms I've been in, you know, we're going to have a regular pregame for the most part. There's times where you're like, you ref with people you know, and you don't do too much of a pregame. It's more of just your reminiscing, your relationship building, and talking about family and work and all that stuff. I'm sure we've all had those games. High school is a little different. Not everybody wants to really do a pregame, you know. We're in the minority of people that love officiating and really want to get better and teach and talk about these things in the pregame. So just know the room you're in, know your audience. But yeah, still be a great partner, and we can initiate. And like Alan said, you may not go through the whole list, but just you can pull from one or two of these points for every pregame. But definitely talk about something. Ideally, we want to go through the whole thing, but you know what I'm saying with high school partners. Some people are just here for a check, which we're not going to judge. It is what it is. They just don't talk the same way as us. So just don't force it down anybody's throat. Carrie, anything from you?
No, I basically agree with everybody they're saying. How do you actually email that document out, or how can we get that?
I'll put it through one of the chats. I want to make a few edits to it, and I'll update it, and I'll put it through the chat for sure.
Gotcha.
I'll let you guys know. Mm-hmm. Carmelo, you ready for the season?
Yes, sir. I actually got some college games for the RMAC still during soccer season, but
nice.
It's really exciting. Yeah.
When's that?
Huh?
When?
October? First scrimmage, October 23rd.
Cool.
And soccer season, if I get postseason assignments, ends November 5th, and then I have games November 11th and 12th.
But you're the number one soccer ref in the state, right? So how could you not get a playoff game?
I went to state the last 2 years. Mm. So my goal is to actually center a state game this year.
Okay.
Yeah, so I have a couple of big boy games coming up that I'm centering that are pretty intense. So. Awesome.
Well, best of luck to you. Have fun.
Thank you.
Dominic, anything before we jet?
really enjoyed going through the document and going back to when we first talked to Portia about how she mentioned how officials in a pregame can get off track, talking about maybe games that happened last night or previously. And one thing I found to kind of dial that conversation back into the pregame is just ask those officials that you're having the pregame with if they wanted to share something from that game that we can put into the pregame. So their conversation is still included from what they want to talk about, but we kind of get dialed in for stepping on the floor for that game that we're going to have that night.
Great point. Absolutely. Thank you for adding that.
Yeah.
Lance, anything before we go?
No, not really.
I appreciate you coming.
Yeah.
And just a reminder to you guys, I told you about the sponsor that we have, referee store.com. So if you guys need gear, I would appreciate if you could check them out. Hopefully their prices are comparable. I'm pretty sure they're same price. So they are full time. It's not like we're just doing a 2 month promotion. I told the owner of that store, I wasn't interested in doing like a promotion. I'm like, you guys want to like come on as a full-time partner and just be the apparel warehouse for Crown Refs, then we would love that. So if you need gear, referee store.com, and if you want a 15% discount on their United Attire gear, which is like their new line, it's just a new product of referee shirts, new material, I think. You do Crown 15 at checkout for 15% off. So just wanted to remind you guys of that and tell you thank you again for coming. I really appreciate everybody. Super grateful, and look forward to seeing you guys next week.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks. Thanks, Paul. Thank you. Have a great night.
Thanks, Paul. Great to see everybody.
Night, guys. Be
safe. John. Later.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
As my daughter, says, bye.
Thank you for listening to the Crown Refs Podcast. Serve the game.